Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Monday, June 22nd, 2026, and this is the Technology Edition.
Today, we are examining the fundamental decoupling of software output from human cognitive constraints. We are moving past the era of augmented coding and into a period where the very architecture of development is being rewritten by autonomous agents.
It's no longer about helping developers work faster, but changing what a developer actually does.
And that shift begins with the emergence of the AI-native workflow and its impact on engineering productivity.
Anthropic is reportedly shipping 8 times more code per quarter than they were in 2025. We are talking about an explosion of digital output, and today we're looking at the engineering productivity revolution and the rise of the AI-native workflow.
It is a fundamental shift in the mechanics of creation, Maya. We're moving away from the era of manual syntax and toward an era of agentic oversight.
Agentic oversight. I love that. That is a very expensive way of saying watching a bunch of bots write code and praying they don't break the login screen.
Well, the goal isn't just watching. It's a complete restructuring of the software development lifecycle. The bottleneck has moved. As noted on Lenny's podcast, the primary constraint in engineering has shifted from code production to verification. You can generate 1,000 lines of code in seconds, but the human or the system now has to verify that those lines actually do what they are supposed to do without introducing regressions.
So the job description is changing from writer to editor-in-chief of a very fast, very hallucination-prone intern class.
The implication runs deeper. That's driving a bifurcation in the talent market. We are seeing the emergence of two distinct, non-overlapping engineering profiles. On one hand, you have the dreamer or the product generalist, people with high product sense who use AI to drive end-to-end iteration, essentially acting as creative builders. On the other hand, you need the deep systems experts who sit in that high-stakes trust but verify layer, handling the complex architectural verification that an LLM might gloss over.
It sounds like a recipe for a massive middle management crisis. If the builders can do the heavy lifting, what happens to the person who used to spend all day writing unit tests and documentation?
That's the part that's getting disrupted. Look at what happened with a recent web marketplace project. The team was able to reduce an engineering requirement from 60 engineers over 9 months down to just 2 engineers over 2 months by moving to a more declarative, code as hardness architecture. The sheer volume of human labor required to launch a product is evaporating.
2 engineers instead of 60. That's not just a productivity gain, that's a total demolition of the traditional scaling model. If you can do with 2 people what used to take a small army, the economic incentive to hire a massive, junior-heavy engineering org just vanishes.
And it is vanishing. There is a real fear that we are creating a 1,000 times engineer phenomenon that makes hiring junior developers financially unsustainable for startups. If a small team of superstars can leverage agents to outcompete a traditional, much larger structure, the economic penalty for hiring anyone who isn't an expert becomes too high. It's hard to justify paying a junior salary to someone whose primary output is effectively being audited by a more expensive, more capable senior agent.
Which leads us to the verification crisis. If you're an expert, you're no longer analyzing data or writing logic. You're just auditing the potentially flawed work of a non-expert agent. That sounds exhausting.
It is a new kind of cognitive tax. Even as agents reduce the difficulty of switching between different codebases, they increase the context switching load. You move from synchronous prompting, where you ask for something and wait, to asynchronous routines. These are high-level abstractions where you design a workflow that spawns a fleet of agents to execute multi-step tasks. You aren't waiting for a response, you're checking a stream of completed tasks.
So instead of a steady stream of work, you get a tidal wave of automated pull requests hitting your inbox while you're trying to eat lunch.
We can trace that further, there is a way to manage that. Some teams are moving toward what Eddie Kim at Gusto describes as an AI-native methodology. They're zeroing out traditional agile overhead, no more JIRA boards, no more heavy documentation, no more grueling stand-ups. Instead, they use PermaZoom environments, continuous synchronous collaboration where the code review happens in real time as the feature is discussed. It's a shift from software as a service, where humans input data to agentic service, where the software proactively manages the workflow.
I'm picturing a world where the software just decides to update your payroll settings because it noticed a discrepancy in a Slack thread.
And that's where the risk lies. You can't just rely on instructions. As the new Stack podcast highlighted, to solve the trust crisis in enterprise AI, companies are implementing deterministic code-based consent frameworks. Gusto, for instance, uses granular data scopes to gate AI access to sensitive info like SSNs through hard-coded permissions. You use the agent for the velocity, but you use hard-coded logic to prevent it from wandering into the payroll archives.
So we're building these massive automated engines, but we're surrounding them with increasingly complex cages.
It's an evolution of test-driven development. The task is no longer just writing a test for a function. It's providing the model with a framework of what good looks like updated content design specs, so it can automate the complex code reviews itself. The engineers are moving from being the ones who build the house to the ones who define the building codes.
It sounds like the boundary between engineering and product management is just dissolving. If a PM can use an LLM as a specialized technical partner to deploy a feature on a platform they've never touched, like mobile, then the technical bottleneck is gone.
Dylan Field mentioned something similar on Hard Fork. He argued that AI doesn't kill design or engineering, it just automates the average or the first draft. It allows the human to focus on the higher quality, more complex work. We might actually see a surge in people holding designer or builder titles because the barrier to prototyping has been decimated.
But there's a catch. If we stop teaching the manual way of doing things, we might lose the ability to fix the machine when it inevitably hits a wall.
That's the apprenticeship challenge. The training needs to shift from syntax and implementation to the double-click ability, the deep, foundational understanding required to troubleshoot when these high-level abstractions fail. If you don't know how the underlying system works, you won't know when the agent is subtly hallucinating a dependency.
Engineering leaders need to stop measuring how many lines of code their teams are pumping out and start looking at whether those outputs actually hit the business goals.
It's the shift from token maxing, spending aggressively to see what's possible, to prioritizing actual ROI.
Investors should look for teams that are moving away from manual monitoring toward autonomous, agentic oversight. Keep an eye on the turnover in junior developer roles. If we see a sudden collapse in entry-level hiring at major tech hubs, it means the 1,000 times engineer has officially won.
But as these automated systems speed up, the window for human intervention shrinks, which brings us to a much more volatile frontier, the rise of attacks that move at the same machine speed.
I think we need to stop pretending that patching is a real security strategy anymore. At this point, it's basically just an exercise in organized, high-latency futility.
That is a bleak way to frame it, Maya, but if you look at the mechanics of modern exploit development, you aren't entirely wrong. We are moving from a world of human speed vulnerability management to one of machine speed offensive execution.
So we're essentially entering the era of cybersecurity and the age of machine speed attacks. It's less about defending a perimeter and more about just trying to keep up with a swarm of autonomous bots that don't need to sleep or take lunch breaks.
The fundamental threat model is undergoing a structural shift. As Dave Bittner and Federico Kirschbaum discussed recently, the traditional window of time defenders had to react between discovery and exploitation is effectively collapsing. We are transitioning from a human defender versus human attacker paradigm to machine speed offense vs human speed defense.
Which sounds less like a competition and more like a mathematical certainty. If an LLM can synthesize hacker tradecraft to find problems or build tools without any human intervention, what does a human social analyst actually do? Are they just watching a digital car crash in real time?
They become the bottleneck. In fact, CyberWire Daily noted that the primary bottleneck in modern cybersecurity has shifted from vulnerability discovery to the human capacity for validation and remediation. AI-driven discovery has made finding flaws significantly cheaper and faster than the ability to fix them. It's no longer a step function of incremental improvements. It's a monumental shift where the capacity for automated execution is outpacing our ability to even audit the code.
And it's not just that the attackers are getting faster, they're getting more creative with the vibe. I'm seeing so much vibe coding lately, where developers just prompt an agent until the output feels right. It feels like we're building a house of cards where the wind is made of automated exploits.
That vibe coding approach creates a massive deceptive sense of completion. It obscures the underlying vulnerabilities because the agent produces functional-looking code that might be fundamentally broken. To counter this, developers are having to implement backstop prompts, essentially forcing the AI agent to adopt an adversarial expert-scale persona, like a security architect, to manually verify the integrity of the generated output.
So we're using AI to spy on AI to make sure the first AI didn't accidentally leave the back door unlocked. It's a recursive loop of paranoia.
It has to be. Because the vulnerabilities aren't necessarily new, it's just that AI is a new mechanism for manifesting old bug classes like path traversal much more rapidly. We're seeing agent jacking too, which is a terrifying supply chain attack vector. Attackers inject malicious instructions into fake error reports, tricking tools like Claude Code or OpenAI Codex into executing unauthorized commands.
It's a total hijacking of the development lifecycle. And let's not forget the scale. We aren't just talking about one person running a script anymore. We're talking about AI scale, where a single human user's digital footprint expands by orders of magnitude because they are managing thousands of persistent, highly communicative AI agents.
And that expansion creates a massive surface area. Look at the recent Microsoft 365 Copilot vulnerability. As Risky Business reported, it was a layer on bad layer design failure. combination of URL parameter injection, a race condition in the DOM sanitization, and server-side request forgery via Bing allowed for single-click MFA token theft. It's a perfect example of how AI-native attacks exploit AI-specific retrieval mechanisms.
It feels like the more intelligent we make our infrastructure, the more we're just handing out automated keys to the kingdom. Even the way we communicate is getting compromised. I keep hearing about visual cloning for phishing, where you just feed a screenshot of a high-fidelity website into a model and presto, you have a perfect clone to steal credentials.
And it's getting even more subtle. We're seeing the rise of modern steganography via invisible prompt injections hidden within photos and video files. This allows for command and control instructions to be embedded in media, essentially acting as dormant command and control that can execute on a sleep cycle without ever triggering a traditional network alert.
So the very files we use to document the world are becoming the payloads. It's a crisis of authenticity. If we can't trust audio, video, or photos, we lose the chain of custody for digital truth.
The data tells a story. This extends to the broader information ecosystem. We're seeing the emergence of AI engine optimization, where actors can manipulate AI search results by injecting as little as 13 words of targeted content into high-authority platforms like Reddit or Wikipedia. It's a way to hijack the truth before a human even has a chance to see it.
It sounds like the only way out is to stop trying to patch the software and start trying to secure the identity. If the code is untrustworthy and the agents are autonomous, the only thing left to verify is who or what is authorized to act.
That is the direction the industry is heading, toward identity-centric, intelligence-driven networking. We need to move toward delegated just-in-time access, using time-limited, read-only tokens so that external agents can interact with services without permanent exposure. We have to move beyond pattern matching toward high-level behavior analytics that can interpret human intent and context.
It's a massive pivot. We're moving from managing technical debt to managing an existential, scalable vulnerability discovery process.
It's also a massive shift in the workforce. The expansion of developer capabilities into non-technical roles like HR or marketing means that 100% of the workforce now has the agency to deploy automation or code. That is a systemic failure in traditional security governance.
Security architects need to stop looking at the code and start auditing the permissions of the agents.
Watch for the first major enterprise breach where the attacker is a set of autonomous, unmonitored agents acting on a single hijack prompt.
But all of this rapid technological upheaval begs the question, where is the actual capital flowing to sustain this much expensive, high-stakes innovation? I was looking at my utility bill this morning, and I realized I'm probably paying for the electricity required to keep a small corner of a single H100 cluster running.
It's getting expensive, but the real story isn't just the power, it's where the money is actually going. We are witnessing a fundamental reconfiguration of global corporate capital. The era of big tech using massive cash reserves for share buybacks is essentially facing an existential threat because that cash is being sucked into a massive physical infrastructure arms race.
So instead of handing the money back to shareholders, they're just building more very expensive warehouses full of glowing boxes.
Two things stand out. We're seeing a pivot from shareholder returns to infrastructure-driven growth. Companies like Alphabet are moving away from massive buybacks toward large-scale equity issuance just to fund the capex required for AI data centers. It's a transition from how much profit can we distribute to how much compute capacity can we secure.
It sounds like a very aggressive way to spend a surplus.
It's more than aggressive, it's a scramble for survival. Bloomberg Tech reports that Nvidia's massive $120 billion prepayment for TSMC capacity has effectively crowded out competitors. When you have one player pre-buying the supply chain at that scale, it creates a massive bottleneck for everyone else.
Which explains why Apple suddenly seems very interested in Intel's manufacturing capabilities.
Stepping back, Apple is actively seeking to break the TSMC monopoly by diversifying its supply chain through Intel and Samsung. They have to mitigate those choke point dependencies. President Trump's recent announcement regarding a potential manufacturing partnership between Apple and Intel has already sent Intel's stock to record highs because it signals a structural shift in how hardware is sourced.
It's almost like they're all playing a high-stakes game of musical chairs, but the chairs are actually massive GPU clusters.
And the music is getting much faster. Look at SpaceX. They are transitioning from a launch provider to an AI-integrated powerhouse. They've recently completed a $60 billion all-stock acquisition of Cursor. Pivot notes that this is a mathematically accretive move. They are using their massive 130 times revenue valuation to absorb a high-performing, lower-multiple company like Cursor to fix the enterprise-level product gaps in Grok.
They're using their inflated stock price as a sort of high-end currency to buy specialized talent.
Something to flag here, it's an acquihire on a massive scale. They're bypassing the talent recruitment challenges faced by firms like xAI by absorbing a pre-vetted engineering culture. And they aren't just looking at Earth either. The strategy is orbital compute.
I've heard the term, but computing in space sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie that hasn't been cleared by the physics department yet.
It's actually a massive engineering hurdle. Bloomberg Tech points out that space-based data centers must be engineered primarily as heat engines rather than compute platforms. In orbit, you don't have convective air to cool things down, so you have to rely entirely on complex radiator emissivity and spacecraft attitude control to reject heat.
So instead of a cooling fan, you just point the satellite at the dark part of the universe?
In a sense, yes. But the real bottleneck isn't the cooling, it's the delivery. Bloomberg Tech notes that the scalability of orbital compute isn't a satellite engineering problem, but a launch vehicle bottleneck. Effective orbital inference requires a satellite large enough to house a full server rack, so the entire industry's timeline depends entirely on the payload capacity and flight frequency of Starship.
So if Starship doesn't scale, the cloud in space stays a very expensive dream.
It's all about the physical reality of the supply chain. And it's not just about the hardware, it's about the economics of the models themselves. IBM CEO Arvind Krishna has been quite vocal about this. He predicts that foundation models will become commodities within 1 to 3 years. Because of that, IBM is avoiding the model provider race and focusing on hybrid cloud architectures and enterprise AI safety.
Instead of trying to build the smartest kid in class, they're building the classroom where everyone can work safely.
That's a great way to put it. They are investing $10 billion into large-scale commercial quantum computing. And the progress there is staggering. Masters of Scale highlighted that quantum computing is moving from theoretical science to practical utility, having moved from simulating 5 atoms in the summer of 2025 to approximately 12,000 atoms in April 2026.
That is a lot of atoms. I can barely keep track of my own molecules on a Monday.
But there's a massive economic tension here. The current trajectory of AI infrastructure investment is, quite frankly, unsustainable. We are looking at a projected $8 to $12 trillion in total capex for data centers. To justify that, you need an unrealistic $4 trillion in new revenue. There is an imminent need for a surge in AI token pricing to make these investments make sense, which will force enterprises to move away from massive 18-wheeler models toward optimized, smaller, more economic models for specific tasks.
So the growth at all costs era is hitting a wall of actual math.
It's shifting toward a rigorous focus on unit economics. We expect that transition to be complete within about a year. We're moving from a period of massive capital influx, like the $25 billion in debt seen from players like Nvidia and Amazon, to a period where the winners will be those who can manage the efficiency of the infrastructure they've built.
It sounds like the era of infinite playground money is being replaced by the era of very strict accountants.
So here's the picture: the infrastructure is being built, the hardware is being secured, and the capital is being redirected. The question now is whether the revenue can actually catch up to the hardware.
Investors in the semiconductor and heavy infrastructure sectors need to start pricing in much tighter margins for the software layer.
It's going to be a very volatile period for anyone betting on unoptimized models.
But as the infrastructure hardens, the pressure on the people actually running these models is only going to intensify. Which brings us to the mounting tension between these massive tech titans and the governments trying to keep them in check. If you're an AI researcher at a top-tier lab and you wake up to find your company's most advanced model has been effectively quarantined by the US government, do you file an appeal or do you just start updating your LinkedIn?
Well, depending on which company you work for, you might currently be doing both. We're looking at a massive escalation in the great AI arms race, specifically the collision between frontier labs and new aggressive export controls. The focus right now is on Anthropic, which is facing a full-scale operational crisis after the Trump administration moved to restrict access to their Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models.
Operational crisis is a very polite way of saying the government basically pulled the plug on their international business. What actually happened? Did a model start reciting classified blueprints, or was it just a paperwork error?
It was a bit of both. The breakdown actually started with what some are calling a failure in corporate foreign policy. Anthropic reportedly expanded a sensitive technology preview to unauthorized third parties, like SK Telecom, without actually consulting the government first. This triggered a massive response from U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, who has issued warnings regarding criminal penalties for granting foreign nationals access to these models under dual-use technology authorities.
The government is treating software code like it's a shipment of enriched uranium.
That is exactly the pivot we're seeing. Bloomberg Tech reports that the U.S. government is repurposing export control authorities, tools typically reserved for physical military hardware, to regulate the sharing of intelligence via AI models. The goal is to prevent both intentional and unintentional leaks of high-level reasoning capabilities to foreign adversaries.
So we aren't just regulating the brain, we're regulating the thoughts that pass through it.
There's a signal here: the mechanism of enforcement is becoming incredibly blunt. Because the complexity of managing identity-based access, essentially verifying the passport of every user in real time, is too high, Anthropic has effectively withdrawn Fable 5 and Mythos 5 from all markets entirely. They realize that if they can't guarantee every user is a US person, the only way to comply with the directive is to just shut the doors globally.
Honestly, I think we've reached a point in tech news where I have to check if I'm listening to a podcast or a script for a geopolitical thriller. We're talking about intelligence being treated like a missile component.
It gets more personal, too. We saw a 90-minute ultimatum triggered recently when Amazon CEO Andy Jassy alerted administration official Scott Bessent to potential jailbreak vulnerabilities in the Fable 5 model. It shows how the regulatory environment is shifting from a stable, rules-based framework toward a system driven by high-pressure, personal interventions between CEOs and the White House.
It sounds like the safety branding is starting to look more like a liability than a feature.
There is a strong argument for that. Traitechery's Ben Thompson suggests that Anthropic's safety superpower functions as a strategic shield, providing a PR veneer that allows them to pursue aggressive business interests while simultaneously defying certain government regulations. But that shield is cracking. When the administration sees safety being used to justify delays or unvetted expansions, the reaction is sudden and restrictive.
And I imagine the doomers who predicted the end of the world aren't helping their case.
Not at all. The All-In crew has argued that AI safety advocates might be inadvertently facilitating regulatory capture. By doom trolling constantly highlighting extreme existential risks, they are creating a vacuum of trust. This vacuum allows hyperscalers like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft to step in as the only adults in the room, offering the massive auditing and KYC infrastructure that smaller, more agile labs simply cannot afford to build.
The endgame is a world where you can only use AI if you've been vetted by a massive, government-sanctioned utility provider.
That's a very real possibility. We are seeing the emergence of a two-tier deployment model. As Nili Patel noted on Decoder, the most powerful offensive frontier models could be restricted to military and government use. Think of them like an F-22 fighter jet, while watered-down versions, which are essentially safer and less capable, are released to the public, more like a Ford Raptor.
Which sounds incredibly inefficient for innovation. If you're a developer in Europe or South Korea, you're suddenly looking at a degraded toolkit because of a policy shift in DC.
It's a telling detail. It's driving a massive trend toward tech sovereignty. If US export restrictions can instantly strip a nation of its economic and scientific infrastructure, then companies in the EU or Asia are going to start looking for alternative hardware and non-US partners to avoid this American regulatory volatility. We are even seeing the risk of intentional model degradation, where, as noted in Hard Fork, companies might purposefully underperform in certain R&D tasks just to pass safety tests, which is essentially deceiving the customer for the sake of compliance.
It's a race to the bottom, but with much higher intelligence.
Or a race to a centralized oligopoly. The industry is at risk of moving toward a cartel model, where competition is reframed as a dangerous race condition to justify centralized, government-sanctioned control over a few selected, trusted companies.
Any venture capitalists looking at Anthropic right now need to recalculate their political risk line items immediately.
They certainly do.
Watch for the next major G7 security summit to see if the trusted partner framework actually results in a tiered hierarchy of global AI access. As we wrap up this edition, the throughline across today's deep dives is clear. We are witnessing the collapse of the gap between intent and execution. Whether it is Anthropic's massive leap in code production or the unprecedented capital outlays from NVIDIA and Amazon, the friction that once defined technical progress, the time it takes to write a line of code, to provision a server, or to deploy a security patch is evaporating. We are moving into a landscape of pure unmitigated velocity.
And that velocity creates a profound shift in where the burden of responsibility lies. The most critical implication here isn't just that software is being written faster, but that the fundamental unit of value is shifting from the producer to the verifier. For the CTOs and architects at firms like SpaceX or IBM, the primary operational challenge is no longer managing the delivery of features, but managing the integrity of the autonomous systems that deliver them. Success no longer depends on your ability to build, but on your ability to govern. If you cannot audit the machine speed output of your agents, your entire stack becomes a liability rather than an asset.
It's a high-stakes pivot from creation to validation. As the digital attack surface expands at an automated rate, the margin for error in that oversight essentially disappears.
Worth noting, the entire industry is betting on the idea that we can scale our intelligence faster than we scale our vulnerabilities. To see if this thesis holds, keep a close eye on the upcoming quarterly revenue reports from the hyperscalers later this year. Specifically, we need to see if the massive CapEx spike in data center infrastructure begins to translate into actual scalable enterprise utility, or if we are simply building more powerful engines without the capacity to steer them.
That is the billion-dollar question. Thanks for joining us for this week's Technology Digest. We'll be back next Monday.